All right, so I'm going to be dragging people in. That's how we're going to do this. First, we'll begin with this guy. What's it? Shalit? Sounds familiar. Let's see what he has to say. Shalit, you are on the air. What's going on?
Hello, Pat. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Are you excited to see what I look like for the first time this weekend?
I mean, I already know what you look like. There's some other people out there that I will be putting faces to names, but I am looking forward to meeting you in person. I'm sure you look just as handsome as you do on stream as in real life.
2 years running, most handsome DLive streamer, 2019 and 2020, believe it or not.
Who nominated you for that?
I don't have all the people that voted,
Oh.
but
It's most of them, I'm sure.
most, if not all, not all, not all, but most, as JLP says.
Very
But
good. Yeah.
yeah,
Tell me about Shallot. Tell me about Shallot Pack.
yeah. So I'm glad you asked. It's actually a big event coming up Thursday and Friday before AF Pack. It's going to be a Trump Hotel sponsored event. Barron himself is going to be there.
Wow.
We the idea behind this is to kind of have a little pre-AF pack meeting. You've got Bread Pills Mansion, and just kind of wanted everyone to meet, congregate, so to speak, at least kind of so you're not overwhelmed with a million people at AF pack.
Yeah, I
Not a
appreciate.
bad idea.
Yeah, that's good. My invite to Shallot Pack must have gotten lost in the mail. I'm sure you sent it, but I don't know if I've ever been if I've been formally invited. So,
Well, are you subscribed to my OnlyFans?
no comment.
No comment? Yeah, okay, yeah. That will remain anonymous. Yeah, I apologize.
You promised anonymity. I'm not gonna say anything. So.
Yeah, no, I actually had messaged Cassandra Fairbanks. I said, "Hey, are you coming to Shallot Pack?" She said, "I've seen that memed in the chat. Is that a real thing?" I said, "Yeah, well, yeah, of course." So we do have some famous e-girls coming. Yeah, no, we're gonna have some
Wow.
hashtag pay pigs there. So could turn into something big.
Wow, I'm looking forward to it. But in all seriousness, Shallot Pack, AF Pack, C Pack, not so much, and all the peripheral events that will take place are going to be it's going to be a great time. I think it's going to be a phenomenal weekend. I mean, this is the GLS weekend was one of the best weekends of my life, and that's in terms of there are going to be far more of our people there. This is a little closer to home. We've got all these, tons of stuff going on. So I'm really looking forward to this weekend. I think it's going to be a weekend to remember. I think it's going to be a huge victory for the cause, and I can't wait. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to meeting everybody. Like you said, like with the GLS, I feel like everyone's kind of feels a little bit more comfortable. Everyone feels more like, okay, let's come out. It's an easier place to get to. I don't know, maybe not a little Johnny on the spot kind of situation, but just kind of more preparation. People are, all right, things have went well in the past. Let's see where this goes. And so, yeah, I know, meeting everybody in person. I know I've got a couple buddies staying with me, and then Bread Pills Mansion, and then I don't know. It's gonna be I have a feeling it's gonna be a really good time. We've been hyping it up for a while, so it should be a lot of fun.
Awesome, man. Yeah, less than a week away. I'm looking forward to meeting you out there, out
All right,
here.
bud.
Yeah.
Well, I won't ask any incriminating evidence about you on stream,
Yeah,
so
we'll save that
take me
for we'll
out.
save that for person. We'll save that for Shallot Pack. Yeah.
Of
All
course. All right. See you,
right, man.
Pat.
Good talking to you. Thanks for stopping by. Harris Walker, we are on air. How are you doing, man?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. You're a bit quiet. Let me try turning up your volume. Say hello. Can you turn your mic volume up a bit? You there? Okay, he was having some mic issues. No worries. I like the laugh and then this the leaving. All right, we'll bring in. Isaac, presumably that's how you pronounce your name. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
Good to hear. So how, what's up? What's on your mind?
Oh, not much. You know, the other day I saw you had some AIM people in a city near me, Sioux Falls.
Nice.
I was just wondering, you guys got lots of plans. You know, you don't have to go into specifics or anything. But, yeah.
We have lots of plans. We do indeed have, we have many a plan on the back burner, things that we're working on, things that will be coming into fruition later in the year. AFPAC is really the main focus for us at this point, but we do have activism taking place all, you know, all over the country, the flyering, the banner drops, the networking behind the scenes, the meetups, all of that stuff goes on in addition to kind of the bigger national stuff that we're doing. It could be a big action. It could be a conference like GLS or AFPAC, but yeah, that's basically an overview of what we're going to be doing for 2020. We've got some pretty big plans, so.
Cool.
Yeah. You have any hot takes for the 2020 election?
Any hot takes for 2020 election?
Yeah, give me a hot take.
I don't know. Maybe Bloomberg wins.
Maybe Bloomberg wins. That's true. It's possible. He's definitely vying to work some foul political magic at the Democratic convention. And I think it's going
to
work.
Literally the whole election. He just buys it all out.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's, Trump himself, he just gets him to, you know, step down. It's like, you know what, I'm not running for president again.
Yeah, he's gonna buy Trump off. He's gonna give Trump so much money. And that's the funny thing, he probably could. I mean, not that Trump would do it, but I mean he could be like, hey Trump, I'm giving you tons of money, and here, you know, Trump, you're worth $4 million. I'm gonna give you $4 billion. I'm gonna give you $10 billion. And yeah, just to go away. Trump wouldn't do it, but he just has that much money, so yeah.
The influence is strong.
Absolutely. All right, man. Well, take care. I'm gonna let you go here. But thank you for stopping by.
Yep. Have a good one.
You too. Big Chungus, you are on the air. What's going on?
Hey, Patrick, what's up? It's another Friday night alone on the call-in show. It's a good time.
Well, hopefully you're not like extremely alone. Hopefully,
no,
you know,
no.
It's 2 in the morning, so
yeah,
for a lot of people, it's, you know.
Morning alone, but good time. The path. Really exciting, you know. I got into, after the Groper Wars, really, I got into a lot of streaming a bunch, and it was nice because basically you guys are everything. You're not crazy. you're not like, you know, the Wignet thing. You're not crazy. You don't talk about killing people, so that's great.
We don't. Yeah, that's not. That's a pretty low bar to be over.
Bad.
But you know, it's No, there are all kinds of crazy people on the internet saying indefensible things. So,
exactly. And it's like, well, these people. But it's nice that there's something out there, and hey, it's gaining traction, which is awesome. And one day I hope to be a bigger part of it when I'm a little bit older. I got some. And. I like the way it's going. Things are going well, and it's a little bit of hope, a little ray of sunshine in the abyss of, you know, postmodern society.
Absolutely. Well, it's good to hear that what we're doing is inspiring you and giving you a sense of optimism for the future. You need to take your white pills where and when you can find them. Just given everything that's going on in politics overall at this point.
Absolutely. Yeah. And trust me, I go to a public university. I see it firsthand. It's as bad as people say, sometimes worse.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, I graduated from college 4 years ago at this point, and it was pretty bad then, but I think it's gotten exponentially worse since then. I mean,
it's snowballing, trust me. It's bad.
Yeah, I mean, so I majored in anthropology, and it's obviously a very politicized major, but back then it was mostly, and it wasn't, again, that long ago, it's mostly like economic leftism, kind of like mild Marxism, where they're like, oh, the bankers are bad. And I, you know, back then and even now, I'm like, yeah, they kind of are. Maybe we disagree with solutions and so forth. But yeah, these days, like back then, there wasn't quite as much of the identity politics. It wasn't until my last semester that I really got teachers saying like, oh, white people are going to be a minority in this country and it's going to be great. And I, you know, even from the beginning, I was just like, I don't know. I don't know if that's true. Like the economic leftism, I was like, oh, I can, you know, back then I was more sympathetic to it. But yeah, it really is the identity politics that has been kicked into overdrive. And I think the existence of the dissident right of identitarianism in America, particularly among younger generations, is a direct result, or perhaps one of many results of, you know, there are many factors in the rise of, you know, the dissident right. But one of the big ones is you have, you know, largely young white men thinking about whether or not there's going to be a future for them in an increasingly anti-white society in which they're a minority. So it's, you know, I wish we weren't in this situation, but oftentimes the left is doing our work for us.
Exactly. And it's, again, all it takes is, you know, I never had like a red, kind of grew up and I knew something's not right. It's something's clearly not, you don't have to be very smart to see that like a normal person going great. And, you know, I mean, I'm taking it's everywhere in colleges. I mean, I'm in class right now, American history, and some of the stuff that goes on in there is just, it's just hard. Like, I know American history. This is not it, right? I mean, in my school, it goes like starting at the end of the Civil War. It's just slavery bad, Native Americans bad, immigrants good, and then like that's it. Yeah, there's no American history other than
that. Yeah, definitely. It's a very politicized, ideological interpretation or misinterpretation of American history. It's a way of, they start with the conclusion, which is progressivism, liberalism, leftism, whatever you want to call it, and then they like find ways that they can basically cherry pick and go from there. I think we're gonna move on to another call, but it's good talking to you, Big Chungus. Take care. You know, things are, I think that good things are around the corner for us. So don't, you know, definitely keep the faith, remain positive.
Absolutely. All right. Well, hey, thanks for doing this. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you got it, man. Take care.
Yeah, you too.
Big Rich, you're on the air. What's going on, buddy? You are muted, by the way. I think a lot of people are new to Discord tonight, so no hard feelings.
Who's that now? Am I on?
Yeah, I can hear you. What's going on, man?
Awesome, dude. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing perfectly fine, man. So as you know, man, I put in my application for AIM. And so I just have a general question, man. Where do you see AIM in the next 5 years?
That's a good question. It's one I get often. It's also a very hard one to answer. There are some general things general goals I could point to, you know, in terms of the organization having more people on staff, in terms of having more members, putting out more content, doing bigger actions, things of that sort, having more influence. And things are coming along well in all of those, by all of those metrics. But when it comes to like where we're actually going to be, that's largely going to be determined by history, because the best things that have happened to the dissident right and the right in general in America have been unexpected things. Things like the 2016 election, things like the Griper War. So we're kind of along for the ride, and you know, our ability to succeed in general is largely going to be determined by how well we can take advantage of opportunities that just kind of sprout up out of nowhere. So, you know, you can, my experience doing this for a little over 4 years is you can lay all the plans you want. You can make all the plans you want. But, you know, oftentimes it's not like you just sit around waiting for something to happen. But oftentimes it really, you know, it really is these unexpected events, these unexpected windows of opportunity that present themselves that end up giving you the biggest victory. So we're really just hyper aware, trying to be hyper aware of the situation, trying to predict things that could happen, opportunities that could present themselves. But yeah, just in general, while we wait for that, you know, doing activism, gaining more members, networking with, you know, with activists, with content creators, putting out more content, doing stuff like this. It's really, I think our work is, we know what we have to do. It's just a question of keeping at it and not losing faith, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. And like you said earlier, you know, the left is really making the job a lot easier, you know, with the consistent and constant anti-white narrative. It's definitely making the job a lot easier for AIM and the Groyper Wars and America First movement. So I see a bright future, man. And like I say, that was all I wanted to ask, man. Blessings to you, brother. And I appreciate what you're doing, man.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Take care. Thank you.
Yep, good night.
You too. Big Rich. I like that guy. All right. We'll see here.
Definitely making the job a lot easier for
Zork Mode. You are live, you are on the air. What's going on?
Yo, Bass, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, Pat, first of all, thanks for everything you do. It's a huge encouragement to see all your work. Really enjoy everything.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
I'm wondering if you've heard anything about a book called American Nations by Colin Woodward.
I have not, no.
Okay, he's not a particularly dissident author, but he's writing a history of what he actually divides into 11 rival regional cultures all over North America.
Okay.
And I guess the bigger question I have for you is, what role do you see regional identity and culture having in American identity, if anything, or as we move more and more into like this unified globalized age, is it really all or nothing America, or is there like any role for regional or even state loyalties above a broader American identity?
Well, I think that identitarianism absolutely allows for multiple levels of identity, right? You can have, you know, civilizational identity, racial identity, you know, a sense of national identity that can be civic or something else. You have your ethnic identity, religious identity, and there's absolutely regional identity too. So I think there absolutely is a time and place for regional identity. It's totally compatible with what we're doing. I think it's just going to depend on how America as an empire is able to hold up politically through the 21st century. You know, most if not all empires that aren't around today have disintegrated, and oftentimes they fall apart along, you know, identity lines. Those could be ethnic, racial, or religious. And I think that if the American empire does kind of come apart, as this could be in like 500 years, I don't think this is going to happen anytime soon, then that could be, you know, you could have regional identities play more of a, you know, significant influence. But I think the longer that time goes on, you know, you're still going to have, you know, just these regional identities and ways, regional cultures and ways of thinking thing, you know, about the world and values. Those are still going to play an influence. They're still going to be a factor going forward. But I think the further you get away from America's founding origins, like, the less and less those are going to matter. And a lot of that does have to do with demographics. That has to do with the erasure of our history. That has to do with people kind of, you know, just this liberal idea that you have to break with the past and enter into the enlightened, you know, present, the enlightened future. So, yeah, I mean, I'm reminded of the book. Albion Seed. That's Albion's Seed, Four British Folkways in America. Yeah, so that basically, I haven't read it, David Hackett Fisher. But basically that book looks at, you know, just basically four traditions of different types of people that move from distinct regions in Great Britain to the United States. So it is interesting. I'll look into the book that you recommended. It is interesting to look into how these, you know, migrations a few centuries ago, you know, to this day affect politics. And people during the 2016 election pointed out that, oh, Scots-Irish are more likely, even just among Republicans, more likely to vote this kind of, you know, candidate, whereas, you know, maybe the Germanic people in the Midwest are more likely to favor another type of conservative. So it's absolutely, you know, even if these identities matter less and less, I think that the kind of the temperament and the overall perspective of people in these regions is going to, it's still going to be, you know, a thing going forward. But then again, you know, what's going to happen when, you know, the vast majority of people in America have been, you know, come from non-Western backgrounds, then it's, you're going to have a totally different, it's right. Instead of 11, you're going to have, you know, I don't know, dozens. So,
exactly.
Yeah, you know, it's possible that America is kind of coming apart at the seams, and hopefully that stops, but, you know, whether or not it will is up to whether or not we get a better ruling class in there that's going to be able to, you know, do things like end immigration and allow for a little more of a right to difference and so forth.
Right. We've got a lot of restoring order to do, right?
Absolutely. We do. One podcast, one Discord raid stream, one gaming stream at a time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, thanks for all your work, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, well, thank you for calling in. Take care, man.
You too.
Boo Radley, you are live. We are on the air. How are you? Boo Radley is not only muted, he is deafened. By the way, my the Discord invite is in the my about section, so I don't need to repost it. I will give Boo Radley a minute there. Hello, Paul. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing, Patrick?
I'm doing well, man.
All right, awesome. Yeah. If I could just ask you a question real quick in regards to packaging kind of the message.
Sure.
So I got a wide variety of friends who more or less have become black-pilled, kind of checked out. Sure. I got some friends that kind of just dig into media. You know, they want to focus on just the plastic things of the world while they can. Well, I have others of the opinion like, well, you know, it's too far gone. Nothing will ever change. You know, Trump is a disappointment. And, you know, in their own way, they've checked out too. So what would you say to those people without lighting the fire of like a coming apocalypse? How would you bring them back in?
Well, you know, I think at this point, the average person who has these views doesn't have that much ability to affect change realistically going forward. They're not going to play like a huge role until, you know, maybe we get a good administration and then people like us can get jobs in there or something. But yeah, I mean, you do want people, for various reasons, to at the very least, even if they're not going to be out doing activism or, you know, calling into a call-in show, you know, once a week or something, you do want them to, you know, maintain a positive outlook on all of this and maybe find some way to contribute. So what I would say is you just have to put things in perspective. The people that often get the most black-pilled are the ones who have, you know, they developed these views in 2016. So all that they've really known is the 2016, you know, exponential increase in energy and enthusiasm and, you know, the subsequent, you know, decline, right? 2017, 2018, there's been somewhat of a decline. The Gripper War shows that there's still a lot of potential, that the energy's still there. I think that there are great things in store for us still, but I think you just got to put things in perspective. And that's something that Jerry Taylor does too. You know, he'll remind people like, look, we are ages ahead. The right in this country, nationalism in this country, is ages ahead of where it was just 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, absolutely. So things have gotten more difficult in some ways as a result of the tech censorship and so forth. But that's a response to us gaining momentum and to these ideas really just burgeoning and flourishing. So you just have to remind these people that. You know, just put it in perspective, tell them that, like, you know, this is, you know, we had this huge rise and then there was a peak around 2016 and it's kind of gone down. I'm doing a bad job of tracing out a kind of a graph here, but it's our low now is still way higher than, you know, the highs that the dissident right had pre 2016. I'm confident that 2024, maybe even 2020, something could happen. That we are going to see a return of kind of the energy, so to speak, of the, you know, just that, you know, that factor, that thing that hit, that we felt in 2016 that was propelling us forward. It's not gone. People just have to understand that these things ebb and flow, and people who aren't able to kind of take a step back from the historical process that we're all experiencing are often the ones who are more likely to wind up being black-pilled and so forth.
All right. Yeah. I mean, that makes total sense. And I think you're completely right. And like you said, you know, a lot of the things that kind of happened, at least for me personally, like 2016 was a big shock, and I think that woke a lot of people up. So, yeah, I'm really hopeful for the future, and I'll be looking forward to stuff coming from our guys here on the right here in 2020.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for calling in, Paul. Take care.
I appreciate you too.
I feel like I don't know, Rush Limbaugh or something. Just, hey, Paul, you're on the air. How do you feel about America? Yeah, this is you know, people get paid millions of dollars to do this. Now, granted, not in a Discord server, but I should be doing this, right? In a healthy society, people like me and Nick would be, you know, we'd be the Rush Limbaughs and whatever else. I think I'd rather be doing something else in media, but yeah. Instead, here we are. But you know what? No place I'd rather be. So, someone has to tell the truth. Boo Radley, we are live. How are you doing?
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, okay. My stream's a little bit behind. How's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm all right. Awesome. I just wanted to say thanks for everything you guys are doing. It's definitely white pilling knowing you're out there doing that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, have you read Edward Snowden's new book, Permanent Record?
I have not. No, have you?
Yeah, it's I think it's a lot of the reason why a lot of people aren't showing support that would be like myself. They're terrified of being doxxed on the permanent record of the internet.
And, yeah, that's really what it is, right? There's a repression apparatus. There's social technology that keeps people quiet, prevents people from speaking out about. You know, it's pointing out that the emperor wears no clothes. Really, you can't point out that the diversity stuff, that the mass immigration, the anti-white, you know, the whole globalist package. You can't point out the obvious glaring issues with that. So if that's what Snowden's book's about, then that sound. What's it called again?
It's called Permanent Record. It's basically just about the surveillance state apparatus and his journey into it, and then realizing just how all encompassing it was, how they really are tracking every single online interaction. It's scary stuff, but.
Yeah.
You know, then the knowledge that in the future some AI is going to go through all of this stored information in some huge NSA data bank and sort through, you know, who's no longer a friend of whatever government is in control at the time.
Yeah.
I also had one other question for you, just about red pilling baby boomers. I think harnessing the power of baby boomers is a good option to explore. And a lot of the responses that I'm getting, though, are when they're confronted with, you know, like, oh, this is the people who are in control of all the media and everything, they kind of shut down, like, well, what can I do? You know, I guess what we can do is just have more good days and bad days until it's all over, right? If you say, well, they're Satan worshipers and they're killing babies or something, then it's, well, you know, God said that he gave this world to Satan, you know, so... we should just, you know, wait until we're in heaven or something. It seems like it's always some excuse to just allow this to happen and be passive about it. And I don't know how to combat that correctly.
Sure. Yeah. Well, so it sounds like the issue is that it's not bringing people to arrive. It's not bringing people to dissident conclusions. It's what to do once people. You know, once some of these boomers realize how bad the world is, they seem to they retreat into, you know, kind of a liberal, like, well, just leave me alone. There's nothing I can do. I'm just one person. Yeah, and I sympathize with them to some extent, in the sense that what, you know, if you're just some person in living in the suburbs and then your world is totally shattered by the reality of our social predicament, yeah, it's like, well, what do I do? I mean, are these Trump supporters? Are these just kind of apolitical boomers? Because I feel like if someone's a Trump supporter, then they're already kind of, they understand globalism's bad, leftism's bad. That doesn't mean they're where they need to be, right? They haven't fully arrived at the truth. But what generally speaking, what are the political positions and inclinations of the people that you're engaging with?
You know, at this point, it's easy for them to blame the liberals and own the libs. They like to listen to people like Michael Knowles, who, you know, works for the Daily Wire, but he's more, you know, jabbing at the libs and, oh, isn't this ridiculous? And, oh, the gays are the, and the transsexuals are going crazy with they're pushing the library stuff. And, you know, but when it comes to combating an actual enemy that is in control of our political system rather than some, you know, blue haired feminist acting ridiculous, as Nick said once, you know, then, it's, you know what I mean? They like,
yeah, they're willing to, you know, admit that some of the low hanging fruit is an issue, like, oh, it's PC gone mad, right? The SJWs on college campus. But yeah, I think part of it too is people, I'm not like this at all, but I think many people are. Many people don't want to believe that the world is as bad as it is. I don't think I've ever been under any illusions about the nature of this world and of society and so forth. But yeah, you know, many people that just, they don't like, this is going to make it harder to sleep at night. You know, it's going to make it harder for them to enjoy things. They need to have, you know, they need to, some people can't tolerate, you know, negativity, knowing that it exists out there, and they want to, you know, turn their eye to it and, you know, maybe say, okay, well, yeah, the liberals on college campuses are really crazy, but like, eh, I'm going to leave it at that. Not like, you know, our ruling class is trying to eradicate us and destroy our civilization and create a global slave state, right?
Right. I've actually been getting that exact word, negativity, quite a lot.
Don't harsh the vibe. Well, this is the generation that, you know, that had, what was it? You know, these were the hippies and so forth. Very, very individualistic generation. I know plenty of great boomers for the record, but yeah, I think that each generation has its pros and cons. It has its, each generation has its quirks, largely the result of, you know, the historical chapter that, that formed that, you know, historical era that formed that particular generation. For the boomers, there really is a sense of individualism and, you know, just kind of living your life carefree, being the best, you know, just living not just for yourself, but yeah, and especially, you know, people as they get older, they're going to be less likely to really be comfortable with changing their views. People's psyches tend to ossify as they get older. So I've had that experience with boomers too, where, you know, I can get them to acknowledge, okay, this is bad, this is bad, this is actually good, and people say it's bad, and you kind of give, like, in my experience, you can give these people like the facts, and you can get them to agree on them individually. And then when you're like, okay, now this is why we should be nationalists, now we should be identitarians, it's like, oh, no, it's kind of hard for them to, like, it's almost like just being right. Like taking that step forward and being like, okay, I am a nationalist now, this is what we need to do. That's almost, it's almost like that there's many of them are incapable of that. Many people in other generations are too. So it's I'm not exclusively boomer bashing here.
It seems almost as if they're willing to accept a political ideology of some sort, as long as, or any plan of action, as long as it involves them not changing their personal plans for the next week or so, right?
Right. Yeah, it really is. And, you know, look, in an ideal society, the average person doesn't have to worry about any of this. People should worry about having kids, bettering themselves, making sure that they leave their kids more than they inherited. And, you know, maybe they pay attention to what's going on in the world. Sure. But the average person does not need to, you know, the average person really just shouldn't have to worry about this. And the fact that the masses are only growing increasingly politicized is, you know, further testament to just the absolute, you know, dereliction of duty that our ruling class has done, right? They've just created an absolute mess. So now even, you know, now grandchildren are forced to tell their grandparents just how bad the world is. And we're forced to basically have this conversation when normally, you know, none of us should really be concerned about this. We have great people in government running things and we can just live our lives. But that's not what history has given us. So
yeah,
we've inherited something else.
Those are great points. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was good talking to you, man. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Patrick.
Looks like, so I banned Studio IKN. I think it's him. Hopefully it's not the guy with the Strasserist logo. Studio IKN, post in chat your name. Let me know what your name is in the Discord chat and we'll go from there. Pardon me, not the Discord chat. Post what your Discord name is. The easiest way to do this is just to have a Discord name that I recognize from the chat. Yours was not. So once I see Studio Icon's name in there, then we can go ahead and do that. All right, back to it. I don't know how to pronounce your name. Asa31337, you're on the air. How are you?
Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
I'm having a little bit of boomer tech moment here, unfortunately, but I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing well, man. We can hear you loud and clear, so don't worry about it.
Cool. So my question is, do you think Ulfric Stormcloak is a Fed, or is he a true son of Skyrim?
That's a very good question. I don't know if I'm high IQ enough to adequately answer that. So I'll preface this by saying, in all seriousness, I haven't played Skyrim in, like, I think I played it when it came out, when that was like 9 years ago. Many of you Zoomers probably still in diapers back then. But Skyrim, yeah, Ulfric Stormcloak. So I don't know if he was a Fed. Some people have said that if you peer deeply enough into the lore, that you can find that he was actually a Thalmor agent. I don't know if that's actually founded. I don't know if there's actually any evidence for that.
Yeah, so there's like a dossier on him in the Thalmor embassy that you find on one of the missions, right? And it's got some juicy info on him. So there's a lot of people that say I guess he was planted there by the Thalmor during a White Gold Concordat or whatever. You know, not to get too nerdy, but
interesting. That's not an angle I had considered. Usually the debate is whether what's better for the Nords, what's better for Skyrim. Ulfric Stormcloak with the kind of an ethno-nationalism, or with the Empire, because there are both arguments. Maybe the Empire's kind of the better, it'd be a better deal for the Nords, but then is Ulfric Stormcloak a Wignat? I don't know. These are important debates that need to be had. So
for sure. I mean, truly the question of our time, you know.
That's right, absolutely. It all comes back to this.
Well, that's all I really wanted to ask, man. Thanks for doing the call-in show. And free Shkreli, Wu-Tang ain't nothing to fuck with.
All right, man. Well, good talking to you. Thank you for the question.
Good talking to you.
Rudax, you are live.
Yo, Patrick.
How's it going?
Uh-oh, this is no good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me? Can't hear you, buddy.
Patrick, I'm talking, but I can't hear you. Why is this? Why can I?
Well, I know it's, and just for the record, this isn't like a Discord account I use unless I'm raiding. So it's not like I have important stuff. None of these servers are like actual servers that are anything. And none of those DMs are important. I'm not. Yeah. John Ball, you were live. What's going on? Hey, John Ball, how are you?
Patrick, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah, what's going on?
Awesome. So I just have a quick question. I'll keep it very succinct. So
sure.
I was wondering, do you think it's better logistically and morally to, let some people remain in ignorance instead of trying to red pill every person, Because it seems not every person can handle having their entire worldview inverted and remained a normal functioning member of society.
Yeah.
I think Pat Little is like a perfect example. He reads Culture of Critique and
then goes off the deep end. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually a very perceptive question. I'm glad you asked it. It is absolutely the case that some people cannot handle being red-pilled. There are various reasons for that. Some people are just probably on the, maybe one nudge away from going insane, and then finding out that the world's wildly different than they thought it was is enough to push them over the edge. Some people are just a little more, they have more of an outsider mentality. They're a little more eccentric. And, normally that's not necessarily a bad thing. Normally there's not much of a social cost to being eccentric unless you do like really antisocial things, but everyone's got a friend who's kind of got out there opinions and whatever else. But on these issues, having the out there opinions and not being able to understand optics and presentation, knowing when to shut your mouth, like unlike almost any other subject, any other interest you could have, in this one, with this stuff, it carries a hefty social cost. So yeah, there are some people that, would be, if they were apolitical, would be eccentric and everyone would like them. But when they become eccentric, when that eccentricity is applied to dissident, views, then yeah, they end up wrecking their lives. So it's hard to say. I would say don't try to red pill everyone. There are some people, like if someone's like kind of like really paranoid or prone to extremes, and maybe not the most well-adjusted, maybe needs to work through some other things, then don't red pill them. There are some people in the past I kind of regret red pilling to some extent, not like in any serious sense, but you just have to know your audience and, are they well-adjusted? Are they going to be able to handle it? Sometimes it's hard to predict, but yeah, we don't need to red pill everyone. That's something to keep in mind. We don't need everyone to agree with us in order to get on board. And I'd say for some people, bringing them just from like apolitical or lefty to a supporter of 2016 MAGA, and maybe not what MAGA is at this point, is step one. If you can get them to read Tucker Carlson's book, Ship of Fools, and agree with everything, like going from zero to that is more important than going from Tucker's Ship of Fools to, something more, more esoteric and right wing. So I would say ease people into it. That's a good way to go. Start off, if you can get them on board with the Tucker stuff, then move to demographics. That's, maybe some basic HBD. That's probably good enough. it's usually the people that go off the deep end with like the more taboo stuff. So yeah, just know your audience, and you're absolutely right. We don't need to red pill everyone. So there's not like a pressing, yeah, this is something I tell people too. Don't feel the need to like red pill your boss or some people. Oh, how do I red pill, you know, grandma at Thanksgiving? Just, you know, maybe be a little careful there, but that's a different dynamic. So
yeah, I think of a certain documentary, like it's, multiple parts, under 30 approximately, you know, if you know what I think you know what I'm referring to. Like,
yeah,
something like that, I think, should be seen by a very small audience. Cause you know, I saw it and I thought about it in a very calculated fashion, but I think a normal person has their complete, you know, worldview inverted to that degree. I don't think most people could handle that. So that's why I was wondering, because I'm watching this documentary and I'm thinking, okay, if a normal person saw this, they could probably, you know, I guess not compute all of this information, because they realize, you know, a lot of the stuff they've been told historically has been false.
Yeah.
And if it's inverted to that degree, then, you know, I don't, they may go off the deep end. And that's what I was wondering it, because I'm watching this documentary and I'm thinking this should not be seen by a mass audience.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think part of the thing to keep in mind too, is people need to remain critical. The issue is there is like a cult like mentality that I've seen people develop when they get red pilled on 4chan or through, you know, the podcast, like the extreme podcast scene, right? Where people are calling for extremely indefensible, like actually calling for genocide or something. The danger is when you have people that are saying like really advocating for really extreme indefensible things, but at the same time, they're the only ones who have, you know, they're the first, that's your first exposure to, you know, the realities of demographic change, globalism, differences between peoples, then you're going to get, I mean, this is just really the issue with the alt-right, is you're going to get the good and the bad. You're going to get the dissident truths, which is what matters, but you're also going to get a ton of baggage, right? And that's why baggage from the white nationalist subculture, white nationalism 1.0, as it's called. And, you know, just with, I mean, that's really how we saw things play out in the alt-right. So with regard to the documentary you're referencing, I think everyone kind of gets what that is. I mean, I remember seeing it back in like 2012, actually, when I first discovered Pol, and I was like, wow, this is pretty crazy. And, you know, as time went on, I became like pretty critical about it. And there are, it's not totally historically inaccurate. It does, you know, dispel some of the ally propaganda. I mean, but there's both sides in a war are going to lie about the other side. That's true. But like the whole angle that they, the whole narrative that they go for is like, I mean, they literally make arguments like the allies were the real racists. Like they were black Nazis, and you know, it's like, oh, actually, you know, Hitler did nothing wrong. It's not like it's basically, it's going from one extreme to the other, from, you know, every Nazi was totally subhuman and hateful and motivated by hatred of Jews, which isn't the case. So it's true for a lot of them, sure. But it takes from that like extreme, that histrionic extreme, and then goes to all the way to the other. So it's kind of an inversion of something that isn't good, and then it ends up still not being accurate. The accurate position is kind of a balanced one there.
And some of the logic, I remember in one of the parts, he was talking about how they had Jewish ghettos in Germany, and it points to, well, this is bad, but look at America, you know, they have segregation. Look at the British Empire, they have colonization. It's like, okay, you're not dispelling the fact that this is terrible, you're just pointing to other nations and saying they're bad too.
Yeah, and it's like they'll show the picture of the black national socialist, like some black guy in the 30s or 40s with, you know, the Nazi uniform, and they were like, oh, this was actually like for all the races. And it's like, I mean, maybe, but like how many black people were there wearing that were like national socialists? Like, I don't think there were many. The Waffen-SS was fairly diverse, but that had more to do with like political pragmatism than it did some like heartfelt, you know, appreciation of diversity, which I guess is really what they're going for. You know, talking about, oh, Hitler shook Jesse Owens' hand, but you know, FDR snubbed him, and that actually is true. But anyways, man, enough about the greatest book never talked about, or whatever. Yeah. Whatever that documentary was. But anyways, good having you on. That was it was a good question. Definitely, I think something that the audience needed to hear. Hopefully they think that over before trying to red pill, you know, their mentally unstable friend. You know, probably can we can, you know, do without him for now. So take care, man. Thank you.
I say thank you for everything you do, Patrick.
I appreciate that. Thank you, John.
You have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Rudex, you are back. Can you hear me?
Oh, damn. I can hear you this time. How's it going, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
It's Matt, I gotta tell you, I'm doing great. It's a great honor to be speaking to the leader of American Identity Movement.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm a recent sub of 3 months.
Hell yeah.
Yes, signed up today. Got to tie it to the movement, you know. We gotta pay it forward. You know, it's wages in the shadows. We got the money. We gotta support you guys so you can do what you do.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's not a requirement, obviously, but without support from, you know, the base, basically, people like Nick and I couldn't be able to do this because we're certainly not getting money from really anywhere else. So we don't have big donors.
You don't have big donors, and you have a lot of viewers. Think about if every time you streamed, one of us gave a dollar. We could do that. Like, literally everybody that's watching this, you know, if they live with their parents, steal from your parents. If you have a job, just, like, don't buy a beer. You know, give a dollar. And then, you know, next thing you know, you're hiring people to make media for you. You can stream more consistently, whatever it is.
Right.
But, you know, I got to tell you, I'm a bit disappointed, Patrick. You didn't read my Ninjagini.
I have those set up here. Do you want me to read it now? I have...
You know what? I got it. I got it right here.
Okay.
All right. So, you know, I was excited to watch my favorite cowboy hat wearing transcendent intellect. Mix those up there. Transcendent.
That's okay. Same.
You know, Nick was saying on a show tonight that you like that turn of phrase, transcendent intellect. It's got a ring to it.
He was saying, I like that. This is the first time I've used that to my knowledge. When did I put that?
Heard it.
Yeah, that was the first time I used it. I mean, it was definitely tongue in cheek.
Well, there you go. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
He must think that you are one. That's
yeah. No, there is just some friendly trash talking, Nick.
There you go. There you go.
Nick was spreading rumors that I'm an Earl Grey tea drinker last night at 4 a.m. in Jaden's stream. So you gotta watch out for that guy. He'll spread all kinds of rumors about you. But go on, please go on.
Earl Grey, not coffee. You gotta have Kicking Horse coffee. You gotta have the gotta have real shit. You know. Like Earl Grey tea, what are you? Well, I guess you're.
I like black tea. I don't drink Earl Grey tea. I mean, Earl Grey tea is a valid choice. It's just an inaccurate statement to say about me. So,
how could you do that? I can't believe that guy.
Yeah, he's no good. That Nick Fuentes just always up to something. Yeah, so I want to apologize for missing your super chat. My laptop died. And...
Dude, I don't care. Yeah, man. No problem, no sweat. Yeah, you know, I could ask for advice. Or book recommendations or something like that. But we all know what we need to do. As members of the dissident right, you know, got to stay sober, stay disciplined, earn a pile of money. And I think this one is key. We all have to earn a lot of money. And I think if we all do this, I mean, you know, you look at other diaspora mindset races, earning a pile of money, you know, and having this sort of strong cultural push. I mean, it's you know, we got to control the rhetoric, and we got to control money and control ourselves. And so, yeah, you know, it's like advice is kind of gay, book recommendations. It's like not really relevant. We just got to work hard, you know, it's kind of the way I see it.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to better ourselves. That's all of us, regardless of whether or not you're a content creator, or, you know, just a kind of a supporter from the sidelines, anything in between, self-improvement. That's what it's all about, right? We're trying to improve society, and oftentimes you have to improve yourself before you can really make that happen.
Yeah. You seem like you've got at least your habits down. It seems to me like you're sort of in pretty tight self-control, but I am interested in your exercise and your lifting. What do you do for that?
Sure. So I lift. I don't have like extremely high lifts. I'm not someone who's going to brag about bench pressing 500 pounds or something. But yeah, I do lifting. I up until fairly recently, I was doing MMA at a gym. I guess it's about a year ago now because it's a while. But you know, I do some training with friends a few times a week. Usually hit, you know, do some light sparring, hitting the mitts. But that's
dude, my guy. That's awesome.
I enjoy that more than lifting, but lifting's a pretty good thing to do consistently. I have basically a home gym set up that I was able to set up for pretty cheap. So barbell set up.
Yeah. That's great. I want to ask more questions, but you know, no dogs. So I think the last thing that I really want to say, because it's whatever, what is it, 2 a.m.? Okay, well, it's 4 a.m. where you are, isn't it?
3:17. Getting there. Yeah.
That's late. So I'll let you go, but you know, I want to give a shout out to my guy Steve Franson. I think he's really onto something. You know, you watch his videos, he's got a pretty good perspective. One thing that I really like that he said was that people in the alt-right, the Wignat types, have a punishment mindset. They want to punish, you know. You know, they say, oh, it never happened, but it should have. You know, this kind of mindset. And he says his perspective on it, his take is they're bringing out something from their childhood into their political discourse. They just want to, they've got this story that they found out. They took the red pill. And now they're like, okay, now this is my chance to get this like secret revenge buried deep inside me. And I think that even us on the dissident right that have, you know, that we're attracted to people like you, people like Nick, who are well-spoken and articulate and cogent and clean. Like we all still have that sort of twistedness inside us. And I think, you know, Steve Franson's angle and his takes, they're really good for.
He's very wise. Yeah, he has, I don't want to say psychoanalysis because that's a little more specific and carries literally a Freudian connotation. But like in terms of analyzing the psychological, you know, angles at play in politics, he's very good at that. I do enjoy his analysis, and I would absolutely agree with him there. I think oftentimes psychological pathologies do play out politically. And look, I mean, I'm not calling everyone who's edgier than I am a Wignat. That's not like, but when you look at, you know, so like these organizations that have gotten busted for being, you know, their members go off and like kill people, or you know, in the case of the base, it's like, okay, that was, I mean, from the beginning, everyone who was, you know, saying knew that that was some kind of federal honeypot. Then it basically is all but confirmed. You know, you look at the people that join these organizations sometimes when like the chat logs leak, and it's, you just get like a sense of like unwellness. I don't know if unwellness is a word, but you know, you do just get a sense of like psychological malaise involved there.
I don't understand. Like with which side?
I'm talking about, like, I guess I would say the Wignats, but again, I'm not saying, you know, just anyone who's like a little edgier than I am. I'm talking about like the, you know, like the extremely like Fed posting extreme National Socialist imagery, right? The people that would like post on Iron March or something. There's like weird sexual stuff there, like when the Adam Waffen server leaked, there was like stuff of it, like talking about like child porn and like gay stuff. Like one of the guys in Adam Waffen, the guy was his Blaze Bernstein. That was either the guy who killed the other guy or he was the victim. But one of the guys out in California who's in Adam Waffen killed basically his gay boyfriend. In the Adam Waffen chat, who was a Jew, by the way, in the Adam Waffen chat, they were all like, oh, hell yeah, this guy's great. He killed like an enemy of our race. It's like, He killed his Jewish boyfriend. God. Yeah, and at that point, you really understand that it is less about politics. A lot of the Wignat stuff's less about politics. Yeah. The people that say there's no political hope we need, like blah blah blah. It's like, well, some of those people are just a little misguided politically. But the people that are like really just, you know, it's about transgression. People who get off on, you know, a little transgression here and there is normal. It's healthy, particularly if you're transgressing against an unjust and immoral system. But if you're transgression for the sake of transgression, you're constantly going to need something new, which again is why a lot of these Adam Waffen people got into Satanism, because the neo-Nazi stuff, it just wasn't hitting hard enough. Mm-hmm. And that's really, I think, what Steve is, part of what Steve's getting at there, is the people who did undergo some kind of trauma. You know, they're just kind of getting off on being bad, and that's not going to lead anywhere good.
Yeah, it's sick. But the thing is that the instincts that drive those people to act in that way and become Satanists, those instincts are in some way tied to people becoming dissidents on the right wing, right? Like the sort of the instinct against domination, that can be taken too far. And so the political and the instinctual and the emotional, they are all kind of blurred. And your podcast is named Restoring Order. And, you know, a Nick's show, what is he doing but berating stupid super chatters? And so we're going through this process of like cleaning up the lines. You know, we are sharpening our soldiers. We are putting up the culture. We're boosting some voices and counter signaling others. And we just got to do that more. You know, we just got to really refine it. And it's been really incredible because, you know, I discovered Poll like a year ago, and like, it's like, man, the only person I can listen to is Jared Taylor, because the rest of you are fucking crazy.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's been the issue up until very, very recently is you had people talking about the only people talking about these suppressed truths, these suppressed, you know, aspects of reality and of human nature have been people that injected that discussion with a bunch of unnecessary and indefensible nonsense. So, you know, we just focus on what matters. We stay positive and just keep going forward. So anyways, man, that was definitely an interesting question. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. All right. Great talking to
you. Yeah, thank you again for the Ninjagini too, and I apologize for missing that.
Hey, no sweat, no sweat. Bye-bye.
Take care. Studio IKN, you are on the air, and I believe I banned you. You were joined under a different name, so I don't feel too bad about that, but I do apologize. How are you?
All good, man. I know it was an edgy picture I have as an Avi. Not the one you banned. I don't think I have what you referenced earlier. I think
I know which account you're referring to. It's I was just looking through some of the pictures in the chat. I'm like, is this guy gonna troll me, you know? But how are you, man? How's your night going?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to meeting you next week, a week Absolutely. From right now.
It's gonna be
quick
great.
Quick question though.
Sure.
About the past. Curious. I don't know if you ever elaborated on this, and I apologize if it's treading on overused ground. Your rise in Identity Europa, how did you go from like a reporter for League of Legends, which I'm playing right now?
That on Discord. What are you playing? What are you playing? What role? What champ?
Right now I'm just playing some of the TFT.
I've actually played Teamfight Tactics. I really like it. Yeah, but go on.
I was just curious how you rose from this league reporter to the head of Identity Europa and now AIM. Big step. I'm just curious if you can even elaborate on that.
I can. I absolutely can. Yeah. So you've doxed me as a former esports journalist. I will have to berate you in person for that. No, I have mentioned that. Yeah, I had a job in college toward the end of college. I mean, it wasn't like a full-time paid position. It was just kind of like a freelance thing, writing about League of Legends, writing about like the tournaments and the strategy and so forth, which coincide, you know, oddly enough, that in conjunction with writing a lot of college papers, but mostly the League of Legends thing got me thinking really critically about my writing and improving on it. And, you know, we obviously had editors and they're like, oh, I think it'd be better this way. So I was able to use that experience both kind of on like, I guess, the resume and also just in terms of the actual skill to pitch to Henrik, like, hey, you should let me write for Red Ice. Because this was around 2016. This was early 2016. That's when Red Ice Radio went from Red Ice Radio to Red Ice TV. So they started focusing more on videos. They built a new site. They wanted to bring more people on to write articles. And it started off as a volunteer thing. It was around the same time I graduated college. And that eventually became a full-time position. So I was doing podcasts, booking guests, writing articles, social media stuff, doing videos. And I did that up until May of 20, that was March of 2019 when I launched AIM. But as to IE, I got involved in dissident networking late 2015. And at the time, you know, the alt-right was something different. It wasn't kind of what it devolved into, you know, 2017, 2018. So, you know, I was going to alt-right meetups, talking to people about Trump and all sorts of stuff. And Identity Europa, I ended up meeting someone who was the organizer in San Diego for Identity Europa. And he was like, hey, you should join this organization. This is what we're doing. It's European heritage. It's, you know, pro-Trump and whatever else. And I was like, okay, this sounds good. I looked into it. Nathan D'Amigo, you know, the founder of IE, was very well spoken. I had no idea where I would end up at the time, and it's actually been a very, very peculiar ride. But it's been very good overall. When I get into something, for better or for worse, I get really into it. And when I got into dissident politics, I really found it meaningful and enjoyable and exciting. And, you know, the stuff that I was doing, I felt was part of the bigger, you know, 2016 phenomenon. And in many senses it was, right, with Trump and the emergence of these dissident ideas onto the kind of the political landscape. And yeah, I mean, just through doing enough activism, volunteering to help out with things, Nathan started giving me more responsibility. And, you know, when Nathan stepped down after Charlottesville, he gave the position to someone else, just based on that person being a little more public, a little more involved in for better or for worse, you know, some of the activism and stuff that had been happening in 2017. That lasted for a few months. When it didn't work out, Nathan asked me to step up, and I did. And I ran the organization longer than anyone, actually, and shut down Identity Europa in May. Pardon me, I keep saying May. It was founded in May of 2016. I shut it down in March of 2019 when I launched AIM, a different organization. That's the organization I run now. So yeah, I mean, it was really just offering to do stuff, right? It was mostly a volunteer thing. So it was, you know, I was a guy that could be depended on, that was, you know, and I had somewhat of an anti-fragile or resilient position, given that I worked for Red Ice. You know, if anything, Henrik would have fired me for not going out and doing activism rather than actually doing it. So just, had the ability to do so. And I put myself out there, and, you know, he gave me more and more responsibility. So.
All right. Well, thank you for the thorough answer. Yeah. And one question to finish it off real sure. quick. Yes. A vote. 3-piece or 2-piece suit?
It all depends on the situation.
well, I'm talking about APAC, AF pack.
Oh, yeah. Well, what you wear to APAC that's not up to me. I won't pass judgment on what you wear there. AF pack. I don't know. I would say it's going, yeah, semi-formal attire, but don't feel like you're going to be underdressed or something. Don't feel like you need to, you know, you need the 3-piece. Yeah, it's hard to say. Which suit is nicer? Are they both of comparable quality?
They're both good. Okay. The 3-piece is a pinstripe, whereas the 2-piece is just a solid navy.
Pinstripe is good. Maybe go for the solid navy for this event.
All right, man. I will see you in a week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting you. Thank you for the call. Harris Walker, you are live on air again. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hopefully you can hear me this time.
I can hear you loud and clear. What's on Brilliant. Your mind?
Other than my boomer tech issues, have you seen the Blue Bloods posting on the timeline?
Blue Bloods? No, I have not. I'm sure it's something. I'm sure it's great.
I'm sure Charlotte could tell you so much. It's his favorite show. I don't think he's seen an episode, but it's on 10 p.m. Pacific on CBS, I hear. I'm not sure.
Blue Bloods, what's it about?
Tom Selleck is the patriarch of a family in New York. He's the police commissioner, and it's essentially that. There's many children that he has. His father is still alive, who's like in his 90s, it seems, who gives him wisdom. About it.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I haven't seen anything about it. I'll have to take a look after I wrap up here tonight.
I'm quite sure that Charlotte's timeline will have everything you need to know on that subject.
Nice. Yeah, I'll stop by Charlotte's timeline and see. You don't think Charlotte's actually seen any of the show? He's just
he admits he's never seen it. Okay. We're boomer posting. I don't know if you've seen this old clip of a gentleman who's made a pot of coffee, and he goes into like convenience stores and yells, "I've made a pot of coffee. Does anyone want coffee?" until he gets kicked out. But we're just playing stupid and none the wiser, and we're tagging Xfinity and all these people, and we're just trying to accumulate information on Blue Bloods. And people just don't seem to get that we won't find this information. We constantly ask when it's on. They'll tell us when it's on. We'll ask what channel, and then we'll say, "But what time is it?" So it's an infinite cycle of just messing with people who don't understand how the internet works.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm going to have to check this out. Sounds like fun trolling.
Other than that, do you have an idea for what the next game you're going to be streaming is?
I played a little Hitman 2 today. I don't know if we're going to keep going with that. It was okay. It was a little slow-paced. I might play Fortnite. Fortnite just has a reputation for being a game that like 12-year-old kids play, so I don't know if that's like really the best look. It's a good game, and a lot of people play it, but I might. I have Subnautica, and people recommended that, so I might give that a shot.
Are you looking more towards something similar to Fallout, like the single player experience, or something multiplayer?
I'm kind of open minded at this point. I want something that's. I don't know if Subnautica is this, but I've played some Halo earlier, enjoyed it just because it's, you know, more action packed than I played a lot of Rust and a lot of New Vegas, and those are fun games, but there is a lot of, you know, downtime. I wonder how many hours on that 30-hour playthrough I spent just like shifting walking. Gear around, dropping stuff, like repairing stuff, you know, just to have your Pip-Boy open doing things there. But yeah, no, I'm probably just going to screw around on Halo or something until I find like a better game to get into. I do want to try a horror game. We're going to see if people enjoy the horror games. I know it's definitely a different experience, like Outlast, Amnesia, something along these lines. We'll give that a shot too. Resident Evil 2 Remastered. People are telling me to play that. So
maybe you could throw an internet classic and play what's that tall gentleman with the pale face in the suit?
Slenderman.
That one might be fun.
Yeah, interesting. I didn't know there was an actual game. I just knew this. I'm just familiar with the character.
Yeah, some. I don't know if it's fan made or an actual thing, but someone made a game. If my word means anything, maybe try your hand at Rocket League. It's a fun multiplayer game.
People have been trying to get me to play Rocket League for like 5 or 6 years. I'm sure it's fun. I just don't think I'll play it at this point.
Understandable.
But anyways, man, I think we're going to start wrapping up here, so not to cut you short, but it was good talking to you, Harris. Take care. Hope to see you some point in the near future.
Likewise. Thanks for giving me a second chance after that boomer tech.
Oh, no worries. No worries. Yeah, it happens.
See you later, Pat.
All right, take care. Agora, you were live. What's going on, buddy? You're also muted, for the record.
Hello?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, Patrick. Long time no see. How are you?
I'm good, man. How have you been?
I'm well. I hope everything's been well with you. I'm sorry I couldn't make it to an AF pack, but I hope you all have a great time.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It would have been good to have you, but you know, I understand it's quite, you know, can't travel all the time.
Sadly.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask though, what do you think of the rise of these paleo libertarians like Tom Woods and Dave Smith, and what's some literature that you would recommend to paleo libertarians?
I would recommend Sam Francis. Ethnopolitics, which, and I'm not just saying this because AIM is the only person, the only entity I know that sells it, but Ethnopolitics is a good 50-page refutation of the GOP's minority outreach program, as has historically been practiced. Also, maybe I'll say this right now: I'm not terribly familiar with paleo libertarians. I don't really know, you know, what their positions are on. Like, do I need to red pill these people on identity, on immigration, on economic nationalism? What areas, what are the main areas of difference between us and them, would you say?
I would say it's mostly economic nationalism. I think a lot of paleo libertarians would agree with you on race, would agree with you on identity, and especially on American identity and the whole America First mindset. Rothbard actually wrote a great essay, Right-Wing Populism, talking about exactly that, the need to put America first and nice. To have good Western civilization values and such. But it mostly, you know, talking to other paleolibs, it seems that they disagree more on the arguments for economic nationalism, though I personally would agree with you.
Awesome. Yeah, so it's, yeah, I'll say about this is if the main disagreement is economic, then that's the lower tier of disagreement. I mean, I sympathize to some extent with libertarians' concerns about the government and so forth, but I think at the end of the day, realistically, things are only going to change for the better through state power, right? We need to get someone in there, and I know this is a long shot, right? But we need to get someone in there to clean out the globalist rot from the deep state, from the political establishment, do something about the media, do something about, and I'm not talking about authoritarianism or something, but, you know, the academic system, right? It's really just, okay, where are the power structures that are working against us, that work for the interests of the ruling class? Dismantle those, subvert those, turn them into institutions that work for us. I think with a libertarian, they'd probably want to just get rid of the whole thing, get rid of the whole state maybe. But for, you know, I do believe in having some state. I don't believe in having, you know, I'm not an authoritarian. I don't think that, you know, the state should seep into every facet of someone's life, someone's life. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's really just a question of are these people willing to use state power to obtain, you know, any common goals that we might have? And if the answer is no, then that's something that I would try to argue with them about. When it comes to economic nationalism, I'd point out that America's history, you know, the free trade stuff that kind of developed as a geopolitical tool during the Cold War, right? We wanted to give we wanted to give countries economic incentives to join with us instead of joining with the Soviet Union. Since its founding, America has been a country that has not been, terrified of tariffs. I point out the work of Ian Fletcher, right? I think his book is Free Trade Doesn't Work. For the record, I haven't read it. I have read some of his articles and listened to him talk, and it's basically, outlines positions that most of us would understand on economic nationalism. But, if this disagreement really is just economic nationalism versus a more free market system, we could absolutely have a debate there. And libertarians are correct that it isn't just the market, it isn't just capitalism that's responsible for mass immigration. We always point out cheap labor, and that's absolutely part of it. But, there are many government programs that allow for this cheap labor to happen, right? That's the issue really is neoliberalism. It's basically, pull yourself up by your bootstraps for us and, corporate, welfare, socialism for, the ruling class, for big corporations. And, we're basically paying for their cheap labor in terms of our tax dollars going toward, welfare and services for illegals and other immigrants and so forth. So that'd be, I heard that Nick went on it, Dave Smith. I still have to listen to that, but I'm sure that's an interesting ideological interaction there.
Actually, I need to see that episode myself. I agree. I think that, I personally think that there can be a bridge between paleoconservatives and paleolibertarians. I guess I still remain a libertarian is because, as a non-white, I personally believe that one of the greatest contributions made by white people is freedom, is liberty. I agree that a lot of libertarians kind of have this ridiculous mindset that, we don't want the government to do anything until it's too late, which is something that we need to change and that we actually need to stop. We need to actually stop allowing these infiltrators to run our government, to have these globalists run our government, I think. And I agree with you that we need to take more state action.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I value liberty as well. I'm not the kind of person that's like, oh, we need a society where the government tells everyone to think, but they tell them what we have to say. It's obvious that's even if you have a good government, how long is that government going to last? Yeah, I do, have reservations about authoritarianism, sure. But it is where I would depart with a libertarian then, maybe not every libertarian, is the need for state power to remedy the situation. And I also believe ultimately you need order before you can have liberty, so.
All right. I agree. All right. Thanks so much, Patrick. And have a good night.
You got it, man. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, guys. That's going to be the last call for tonight. I'm not done streaming. I'll stream for a little bit more. But that was good. That was fun.